Joining me to have a further look at today's papers is journalist and broadcaster Andy Jones. Andy, morning.
Morning.
Let's start with those warnings, those quite alarming warnings that we're entering the era of global boiling. What do you make of that language, first of all?
It's designed to excite and scare. It's designed to get an impact. This comes directly from the UN Secretary General. This is Antonio Guterres, who was speaking live a conference yesterday about the era of global boiling. We've gone from global warming to global boiling. I believe if you believe the records, we've had something like 27 of the hottest 30 temperatures ever seen in July this last month. Obviously, if you're sat in Britain watching this now, you'll be thinking, well, we haven't had any of those temperatures here. It's been raining, it's been horrible. But these temperatures are obviously being taken in Greece, in Africa, in Asia, and of course in Italy, in Sicily, where they've had fires. Obviously, we've had fires in roads. What action are they looking to take? They talk about limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees at this conference yesterday. But of course, as you just touched upon, all of this is useless without the input of the world's biggest emitters, which are obviously China, America, Russia, India. I think Britain is just about in the top 20 in those. And so it's very, very hard without serious action. Obviously, we're looking at our own Prime Minister. We're pushing, the Telegraph are talking about pushing back on net zero. Rishi Sunak has rode back on some of his recent net zero promises. And also, we're looking to, as we're going to be talking on the show shortly, we're looking to rapidly increase the number of homes we're going to build, which is obviously a big CO2 emitter.
Yeah, and it's such an interesting debate, this whole thing about net zero, because I think everyone agrees that, look, we need to address the climate crisis, and obviously the UK has the target for 2050 to be net zero when it comes to carbon emissions. But Ed Conway was making the point in a comment piece for The Times earlier this week that maybe green policies need to be more carrots and less stick. And, you know, we had the Uxbridge by-election last week, surprise victory for the Conservatives, some people saying, could that have been a result of the controversial expansion of the ULEZ scheme? And ULEZ is an example maybe of a policy that some people feel is punishing ordinary people, whereas maybe what needs to happen is big countries like China and India need to pull their finger out.
Yeah, it's funny that Just Stop Oil are protesting on roads in London where a lot of the vehicles are now, you know, you see the pictures of Just Stop Oil stopping cars moving traffic, and in the background are buses which are eco-compliant, black taxis which are eco-compliant, electric vehicles, Uber drivers which are eco-compliant, and of course cyclists which are very eco-compliant. They are not protesting outside the Chinese embassy, the Indian embassy, the Russian embassy. Of course, Russia's what a huge emitter and is emitting probably the most CO2 in the world at the moment with its aggressive bombing campaign in the Ukraine. We, the consumer, the British consumer, are probably some of the most active and aware in terms of recycling and CO2 emissions, and yet we are being hit the hardest in the pocket. There is none of this happening in other countries. And, of course, with an election year coming up, yes, we're scared about the planet. Yes, I'm absolutely not a climate denier. I'm absolutely trying to do my best personally to help the planet. But equally, when it has been hit in the pocket and you see these measures aren't being taken abroad, you sort of seem to think, well, you're screaming at us when the direction has to be other countries.
Daily Express front page this morning, new pension triple lock threat. They're claiming Labour could be set to backtrack on the pension triple lock if it wins power. And of course, triple lock is the guarantee that the state pension will rise in line with either earnings prices or 2.5%, whichever is highest. Labour says it remains committed to the policy, but the Express is a cast iron pledge wasn't made at the recent Labour National Policy Forum in Nottingham. Andy, do you think it's time to revisit the triple lock?
Well, first of all, in this story, could does a huge amount of lift, you know, heavy lifting here. That Keir Starmer could lift it, he might not. This story comes from The Express, who have taken it from a place called Labour Hub, which is a left-wing website, which has said that maybe you will, maybe you won't. Of course, Keir Starmer, don't do anything while your enemy is making mistakes for you, has obviously been sitting on the fence pretty heavily recently, as Rishi Sunak has been, you know, the Conservative government hasn't been able to get to grips with the problems. I think the huge difficulty we've got, to answer your question, is that there is only so much money to go around, particularly after COVID. Something has to give. If he's going to have all of these tax concessions for younger people, if he's going to help younger people get on the housing ladder, if he's going to create money for the NHS, if he's going to create money from all sorts of different things, green initiative as well, that money has to come from somewhere. And so until he's got hold of the books, nothing is off the table. And so the triple lock, which obviously I think protects 12.5 million pensioners, will be potentially discussed. But again, Starmer hasn't said that he's definitely going to get rid of it. In fact, he hasn't made any statements about this at all. All this is a sort of express story, which says that he very much could do. But we won't be hearing any hard promises from Keir Starmer until we get a lot closer to the election.
I mean, if Keir Starmer, or indeed any political leader, wanted to look at the triple lock, it would be incredibly controversial. Because even though a lot of people say, look, if you look at the social contract in this country, maybe things are skewed too much in the favour of older people and that maybe the young have had a raw deal in recent years. Having said that, we know it is older people who are more likely to vote. So it would be electorally very risky to make any kind of changes to the triple lock.
Yeah, if you want to get in, you very much leave pensioners alone. The one group that gets out and votes is pensioners. And Keir Starmer will be very, very, very much aware of that. But one of the groups that are hardest hit are younger people who obviously don't vote. And perhaps the reason why they are hardest hit is because they don't vote. Sir Keir Barty, who's vice chairman of the Conservative Party, labels Sir Keir Starmer, holidays are here and the king of flip-flops is back. And he goes on to make lots and lots of endless puns about him being the king of flip-flops. But again, look, Keir Starmer is going to face these attacks until he actually nails his colours to a mast on something. It's all well and good sort of watching the Conservative Party implode and economic conditions being particularly harsh and causing a lot of woe. But until we know what Keir Starmer stands for and he's busy talking about gender again, I see in the papers, it'd be good to know what he stands for on the economy.
Emma Duncan has an interesting comment piece in the Times today on page 22 saying the national interest must trump NIMBYs, kowtowing to localism stalls house building and makes road and rail projects more expensive. Talking of younger voters, obviously one of the big issues for them is the housing crisis. Do you get angry with these so-called NIMBYs, Andy?
I get angry with lots of people, but I think everyone gets angry with NIMBYs until they become a NIMBY themselves. The British government has talked about the needs we have in this country. We need more wind power farms, we need more solar farms, we need more prisons, we need more schools, we need more housing, we need more affordable housing, we need more pretty much everything else. And everyone says, that's great, let's build on the green belt. And then it's the green belt near us, and then we get furious. And then we think, oh, well, actually, I don't want my bit of green belt taken up by housing, or I don't want my sea view taken up by an offshore wind farm. And we totally understand it, but we have a limited space here. And with the, even though we built, I think, 250,000 houses last year, that number, as detailed in Emma's piece, is going to dramatically drop. I think there's an official group that says it's going to drop to 120,000, 130,000 next year. And obviously, look, we have an ageing population, as demonstrated by your triple lock story a moment ago. Net immigration is 600,000 a year. And if we're only building a maximum of about 230,000 a year, the housing crisis is not going to get any better. The cost of housing in major cities, not just London, we constantly talk about London, and I live in London, so it's something that I'm aware of, but housing around the country is very, very expensive. Wage stagnation is in place in certainly a lot of other parts of the country. But there are huge problems to building houses that are not just getting permission. For instance, they were talking about building 200,000 homes in Cambridge. A Tory minister, Rishi Sunak, was talking about this, and then a Tory minister came forward and said, well, who works in the area, said, actually, look, we don't have the water to build 200,000 homes. Anybody that lives around the country will know the problems with public transport and the rail network. Anyone who lives around the country will also have heard problems of getting broadband, etc., etc. And we were talking about boiling point a moment ago, and we've got all sorts of net zero implications which must be adhered to when it comes to building new homes. This is not simply an issue of which Emma talks about, and it is a valid point, but it's not just this issue of local councillors having too much power, government having too much power, people may have to say no, etc., etc. One of the other problems is we have a lot of derelict homes in this country which aren't used, and another problem is that a lot of the new homes that are built, a lot of them are sold immediately offshore to countries, Singapore, Hong Kong, Dubai, for foreign investment, and then people don't necessarily live in them anyway, or it doesn't necessarily benefit British taxpayers. And so there's a huge raft of problems, and housing is something that I write about quite a lot. It's a huge raft of problems, from regulation, red tape, NIMBYism, greenbelt, net zero, but of course infrastructure as well. If there's no roads, trains, water, etc., it becomes very, very difficult to build in these areas because the infrastructure is not in place, even if you wish to extend it.
Just finally, Andy, story in the Sun this morning, page 18, Summer of Love Handles is their headline. Soggy weather causes boom in comfort food sales. Do you know, I had for lunch yesterday, I went to a proper pie and mash shop in London, one of those old sort of eel and pie houses, proper kind of comfort food stodge, but not very summery. Have you had a change in your eating habits given the slightly soggy weather of recent weeks, Andy?
I think it's very important that Times Radio only broadcasts from the neck up these days because we're getting very, very big bellies on this station. I think we're all desperate to do a bit of exercise and eat healthily, but when the weather dictates, and the weather here is absolutely horrible, it's cold and it's rainy, which again touches on the boiling point question earlier on, it becomes very, very difficult. But I think it's DEFRA, isn't it, in the paper, we're talking about sort of putting extra tax or banning M&S meal deals, the Tesco Finest range, these sort of luxurious meal deals where they put extra cream and extra calories in just so it tastes good. I don't know, are we allowed any small pleasures left? I think when we wanted a Conservative government, or those that voted a Conservative government, it was going to be low tax, low bureaucracy, and yet we've got absolutely raging tax levels and increasingly what seems like very high bureaucracy. I think when it comes to election pledges, obesity is important because of the strain it puts on the NHS, but I'm not sure hitting those of us with a luxury meal deal or buying something slightly fancier for a midweek treat are really the way to go.
Andy, thank you so much. Journalist and broadcaster Andy Jones with a look at this morning's papers. You're listening to James Hansen on Times Radio Early Breakfast.